I'm Susan Shepherd. Worldwide, millions of people don't have access to light. To bring them conventional light will require the construction of new power plants. But one scientist in Calgary believes light-emitting diodes can provide a cheap alternative. Dave Irvine Halliday recently won the Rolex Award for Enterprise for bringing LED light to the developing world. He says inspiration for the project came while he was hiking through a village on a trek in Nepal.
There was a wee schoolhouse, and I heard these children singing in the schoolhouse. So when I got down there, I kind of just popped my head in the window, which, of course, had no glass. And not only were there no children actually inside the school, but there were no tables, chairs, or teacher. And when I kind of popped my head back out of the window, I noticed there was a lovely hand-painted sign above this window, and it said, "To you travellers, our children don't have any regular teachers, and if you'd like to kind of stay around for a couple of days and help our children, we would really appreciate it." I think at that moment, everything sort of came together, because when I popped my head in the window, my first thought was how dark it was. I don't know. I honestly do not know why the thought suddenly struck me. Is there anything that I could do as a photonics engineer to bring light to these folk, at least help the children with their education?
Now, why did you choose light-emitting diodes?
It just kind of struck me that if we were to produce light that was affordable and reliable and rugged and also using very, very low power, we couldn't go along the standard routes, in other words, incandescent bulbs or even the much more efficient, you know, compact fluorescent lights. And because I deal with diodes basically every day in my life, though it's in kind of fiber optics, for some reason, the thought has occurred to me, well, why don't we try LEDs?
Now, why not use compact fluorescents in these villages? Don't they compare more favorably in efficiency to a white light, light-emitting diode?
I gave compact fluorescents a really deep look, but came to the conclusion that there was still approximately a 10-to-1 difference in the amount of power or energy that I would need in order to light up a home to a useful level. And this useful, the term useful, I had to kind of define that myself. And when you find out how a light-emitting diode actually emits its light, it emits it as a cone. You can actually direct it very efficiently to where you actually need the light to be, as opposed to lighting up the walls and the ceiling and the corners of the home. And in a nutshell, the bottom line is you can light up a home to a very useful degree in the developing world with a single watt of power. It's a bit more difficult to do that with a compact fluorescent. It just came down to the energy requirements, plus the reliability and the fact that LEDs live for literally decades.
Wait a sec, let me get this right. 1 watt of electricity is all you need to light up, say, effectively, that is, light up a single room where someone might want to read and work and live and cook?
When will you realize you could read a book quite easily, even for eyes my age, with 0.1 of a watt? When you slap 9 of these together and give yourself basically a 1 watt lamp, that was the original design, suddenly we could light up a, when I say a wee room, I mean a room maybe, you know, 10 by 10 or 10 by 14 feet.
What are the power sources that you've been using for these lights? If it only takes a watt, how do you get that 1 watt?
We've done it in 3 ways. The first method was what we call the pedal generator. That pedal generator, which kind of pumped out effectively around 40 watts or whatever, it would charge up 5 of these small 12-volt batteries simultaneously. The second method we used was very small hydropower. The third way, which is probably the way that we're going to use mostly in the future, is good old solar power, solar photovoltaic cells.
What stories have you heard? What have people told you about how all this has affected their lives?
I think the first quote that really made a difference to me, in fact, when I say make a difference, it's the kind of thing that it kind of chokes you up. There's no question about that. And that is when I was sitting chatting to a villager in the very first village that we lit. And this fellow turned to me and said a friend of his from another village had come up to see the lights. His friend had kind of remarked, "A foreigner has come and made Tulipokara," that's the name of the village, "has made Tulipokara heaven." And it was such a simple, kind of right from the heart statement that I actually couldn't speak for a couple of minutes while I kind of absorbed it. I think one of the other ones that it's meant an awful lot to me and, you know, my colleagues was in Sri Lanka. And we just lit our first village there. It was actually about 1 o'clock in the morning. We happened to have been out visiting people. We're coming back through the jungle. And we saw this light and we recognized it immediately as one of ours. So we went over and the father was still up. He opened the door and showed us the children who were all kind of lying on the mat on the floor. And he said, "This is the first night in the entire life of all my five children that they've been able to read at night." It's that kind of thing that, as I say, it kind of reduces you to tears almost. But if you ever needed a reason, which we don't, that certainly gives you it.
Thanks for lighting up this conversation, sir.
Thank you very much.
You can hear Living on Earth on National Public Radio and the World Radio Network. To find a member station near you, go to www.loe.org or www.npr.org. This is Living on Earth Today.